16. Tinctures and Whispers. The sack over Oppie's head was tied tightly around his neck and smelled of rotten potatoes. His hands were bound too, and he staggered forward every time his captors gave him a shove. There were two of them, the doctor and a man with a hoarse voice. Oppie didn't ask any questions and had long since stopped sobbing. He'd been duped. He knew better than to follow a stranger into a room, but he'd been mesmerized by the clockwork bird. Before he could react, a large man had yanked the sack over Oppie's head and knocked him about until the doctor said, "Don't harm the specimen any further." Through it all, he heard the taunting chirping of the sparrows. He thought of his mother waiting at home for him, wondering where he was, and the sobbing began. Then he was dragged along and tossed up onto a hard surface.
"Take us to Balcombe," the gruff man said, and another man grunted.
Horses snorted and the surface shook, so Oppie decided he was on a wagon. After what felt to be a long, fearful journey, the wagon stopped and he was pulled to his feet.
"I'm sick of going down there," a man grumbled. "Not fit habitation for man nor beast." "It is necessary to have utmost secrecy," the doctor said. "Now, please. Do your job."
Oppie was led along for a few yards, then thrown on the ground. The sound of grating metal startled him, but he was even more jolted by the stink that followed. Even the man who was holding him shuddered as he muttered, "Ghastly piece of work, this." Oppie felt another heavy rope drop around him. It was quickly tied, and he was given a shove. As he fell through the air, he had just enough time to let out a little scream before he was jerked to a stop by the ropes. The top of his skull struck something so hard that tiny stars glittered inside his head. The smell made him heave. He feared he'd throw up in the sack and drown. He gritted his teeth in an effort to hold himself together. Hands grabbed him, set him upright in knee-deep water. No, not water, he decided, as he took a step. Too thick. Sewage. The hands half-pushed, half-dragged him through the muck for several minutes. Then he stumbled across solid ground. A door closed. It smelled only slightly better, wherever they were. An aristocratic male voice asked, "Why is this boy here?"
"He's me son," the man beside Oppie said, shoving him forward. "Pay him no, never mind."
Another posh voice said, "Why is he wearing a sack?" Someone cut the cord around his neck and ripped the sack off Oppie's head, taking a clump of hair with it.
"Better then?" the man asked.
The lamplight blinded Oppie. The doctor looked down at him, his eyes magnified by lenses, so he resembled a large insect. Behind him, several men in fancy coats stood at the end of the room. Two were staring at him, but the others gazed off into space. Nearby, leaning over a desk, was a red-haired woman in a black jacket and trousers. A woman in trousers? He'd never seen such a thing in his life. One of the young men seemed familiar. Oppie couldn't read, but he collected drawings and photographs of the royals, pasting them to his wall with Queen Victoria at the top. The man looked for all the world like Prince Albert, the Queen's grandson and the second in line to the throne. Why would a prince be in the sewer? The doctor reached out and patted Oppie's shoulder.
"You look frightened."
"I'm not," he spouted, though in truth he was about to wet his breeches.
"Good. A brave young man. Now I have work to do with these gentlemen. Please excuse me."
He walked over to a series of beakers being heated by candles. Using tongs, he lifted one, tapped the glass with his finger, then went over to the young gentleman standing next to the prince. While the prince's skin was noticeably pale, the gentleman looked tanned and robust.
"It's your turn, Mr. Featherstone."
The young man blinked repeatedly.
"I'm not certain I want to drink it now," he replied.
"Come, come, it's a very important experiment. Your companions have agreed to participate, and you have already signed the papers. You will go down in history for this."
"Why don't I remember coming to this room? I thought we were going to study the stars."
"The stars?"
A derisive huff came from the woman at the table.
"Be a man, Mr. Featherstone.
Your father would be ashamed of you. I'm not afraid, he said, and took the flask, gulping down its contents.
He grimaced, and his hand went straight to his head. A look of absolute horror crossed his face, an expression so hideous that it took up his breath away. Featherstone's legs buckled, but he was caught by one of the doctor's henchmen.
You'll find your legs again in a moment, Mr. Featherstone, the doctor said, and your mind will soon be as clear as blank paper.
A few moments later, as predicted, Featherstone did stand on his own. There was something odd about his eyes. The other gentlemen watched all of this impassively. Prince Albert took his portion next, responding exactly as Featherstone had. Soon all the young gentlemen were seated along one wall, their eyes glazed over. Oppie was surprised at how still they sat. The henchman led Featherstone to the woman at the desk. She spoke into the young man's ear, reading something from the papers on her desk. Oppie couldn't hear what she said, but when she was finished, Featherstone nodded and stood by the door. He looked to Oppie like a dog waiting to be let out. One by one, all of the young men were taken over to the woman, who whispered into their ears. None of them said a word, and by the end, six stood in line behind Featherstone. They are ready to go home, Mr. Fur, the woman said to the large man. He nodded, and the gentleman followed him through the door and out of the room. Prince Albert, oblivious to all of this, was left sleeping in the corner. The woman stood and stretched, revealing that she had a metal hand. Oppie couldn't keep his eyes off of it.
Well, Cornelius, 7 arrows have been loosed. In this alone you have accomplished more than any chemist in history. I am proud of you.
It's a small thing, truly, the doctor said, and we are only half done.
Yes, half done. You are always dedicated to the task.
She shook an admonishing metal finger at him.
You work too hard, but soon we will rest. May I have my sparrow back?
Of course.
He lifted one of the sparrows from his shoulder and handed it to her. She placed it on her own.
Ah, this is one of the loveliest gifts you've given me. Do you need help with the boy?
Yes, just a moment's help.
The doctor and the woman returned to Oppie's side. The second sparrow still clung to the man's shoulder. Without even looking Oppie in the eye, the woman cut the ropes with a knife, lifted him, and dragged him into a second, smaller chamber. She placed him against the wall, where she snapped manacles around his wrists and ankles. Oppie thrashed about wildly.
It's only natural to fear what you don't understand, the doctor said,
and his bird chirped in agreement. He touched Oppie's shoulder with a cool hand.
Ah, good. You're already strong and your bones are well developed. When you tire of fighting me, I will give you some of the magic potion that my young friends just received. But it will be a larger dose and it will make you much stronger. I know how young boys wish they were stronger. After all, when England's children rise up to strike against the old blackguards who keep them down, you will need to be strong. So, when you are ready to cooperate, my boy, we can begin.